From the studios of KUSP 88.9 in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Lisa Carver is my guest. She is the author of Roller Derby, The Lisa Diaries, and lots of other things in books and on the web. She has a new book called Reaching Out with No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono. According to an interview in a recent New York Times magazine, Lisa Carver has absolutely no interest in discussing her new book. But, Lisa Carver, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm just not happy to answer your question.
All right. Well, what do you want to talk about?
Well, why don't I ask you questions?
Okay, go right ahead.
All right. Well, first, what are you wearing? But I don't want you to tell me what you look like, because I always picture, I listen to NPR all the time, and I always picture you guys with no face, and I like it that way. But I often wonder what you're wearing.
It just so happens that I have no face.
That's very lucky.
I'm just wearing, you know, the usual. I have a leotard and a tutu. Actually, I'm in a bag.
You really could be.
I could be. That's right. Sorry, it's radio.
I love that about radio.
I like that too. Where I get disappointed if I see the pictures of radio people, because I have a picture of them in my head, and I like the picture I have in my head.
Yeah, I avoid you. I avoid you guys.
Well, I have a picture of you in my head too, but I've actually seen pictures of you, so it's not quite the same.
I don't look anything like that.
You have someone who stands in for you on your dust jacket pictures and so forth.
No, it steals my soul. So I have so many pictures that I have no soul left. I'm like, I picture you with faceless.
I actually am devastatingly handsome. But that's what you pictured, I'm sure.
No, you have no face. You know that Japanimation where they have the big flying cat and the ghost? Well, have you ever seen that ghost that's like sort of like a long sausage with a blank hole on top?
That's what radio people look like to you?
We're off to a good start. Building rapport.
You know, I thought we would mention during our conversation, if you didn't mind, have you heard of Yoko Ono, the artist Yoko Ono? She's pretty interesting. I just read a book about her as a thing.
I did.
It was a good little book, too. And I really enjoyed it. It was a well-written, and I think all my listeners would also enjoy reading it, even if they don't like Yoko Ono. And it's interesting how many people don't like Yoko Ono. I think the people who don't like her don't know anything about her in general, and they think that she just screams and does that caterwauling thing that she does occasionally do, but that's not all there is to Yoko Ono.
It's peculiar how virulently people hang on to not knowing about her as their right. And, you know, did you read the comments in the Times expert?
After your article there?
Yes.
What did people say?
Well, a lot of people were saying, you know, really sweet, intelligent, lyrical stuff, but a lot of other people were saying, you know, what a hag, and she's no talent, and it would have taken me 1 minute to write that book because I just would have said, she sucks, and which is very peculiar for New York Times readers, I imagine. And if you go on YouTube, you'll see a lot worse.
Oh, you quoted some of them in the book, some horrible things that people say on YouTube. But, you know, I think it has to do with Beatles fans, because there are also lots and lots of Beatles fans who surprisingly hate Paul McCartney, and they say similar things about Paul McCartney, although they don't say that he's ugly or things like that. But they, you know, they hold on to their wrong-headed Paul McCartney beliefs, that Paul McCartney only does sappy music and that his music sucks, blah, blah, blah. I even had an interview with somebody here on the show who was a famous music critic. I don't want to mention his name, but it was Robert Hilburn. And he told me that he thinks McCartney sucks. And I said, well, have you listened to any of his music in the last 20 years? He goes, no, because it's terrible.
My ex-husband's favorite album of all time was Ram. Is that the Paul McCartney song?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the double album. And he would look at it all the time, and he was the performance artist, Costas, who would, you know, regularly smear himself with excrement, and fake excrement. And so you wouldn't think that,
that he'd like Ram.
That he would love Ram, but he thinks in his mind he's just like Paul McCartney. But the thing about Yoko's detractors which one, they don't have anything to back it up. It's not reasoned. It's just pure fiery hate. But secondly, it's not just about that she married a Beatle, because some of the people, I like to hang around with Republicans sometimes. It's fun for me. And some of the ones that hated her the most also hated the Beatles. But it was the same thing about both John Lennon and Yoko Ono, I think, that disturbed these guys, which is that if they got too close, they might realize that they were nice, even though they had gone against the grain and, you know, wore their hair wrong and didn't have the right posture.
Well, you know, one thing about Yoko Ono that I think you missed because you were too young. You said in your book that you came to Yoko Ono, I think it was in the 90s, and you found a used copy of Season of Glass somewhere and took it home and listened to it. And that was like your introduction to Yoko. Was that right?
Well, thank you for calling me young, but it was in the 80s.
So, but I remember really, first of all, when John was killed, that was like, you know, a really devastating and horrible thing that stuck with me. I mean, it still sticks with me, but I mean, right away, when it happened, it was like months of actual, you know, mourning. Probably worse than I ever mourned the death of anybody that I actually knew. But Yoko really helped me through that period. First of all, a couple of days after it happened, she published a letter in the New York Times, which was like, you know, she didn't have to do that kind of thing, but she wrote me a letter, and everybody like me, and that letter was really, really meaningful. And then within a few days, she released that record, Walking on Thin Ice, which was a little 45 of the song that she and John had been mixing the night that John was killed, which was also a gift that she gave us. And then, you know, in the summer, right, you know, when I was still kind of just still in mourning, but slightly coming out of it, she brought forth this gift of Season of Glass, which is a pretty amazing thing to put out this record. I mean, that was the way, I guess, as an artist, she dealt with her own grief, but that she took the time to give it to me, and as though she cared about me and my grief.
That's funny, the things that you take from her are very, they're manly things that you're taking, you know, grief, murder, being kind when you're feeling down. And the things that stand out for me are like when she talked about having sex as a widow and what it felt like. And that to me was a gift, because I see my, you know, someday I hope to be a widow.
Someday to look forward
to. I'd rather
to.
That than leave one.
Right. Uh-huh. Sure.
and that's got to be the loneliest thing in the whole world. And I can't think of any other song that has dealt with that topic. Whereas maybe I'm just completely making this up, but I think in the olden days, like, you know, 3,000 years ago, I think that when we told stories through songs and tales, that we did talk about things like that, because it was important. It was a gift to give to people to help them through life, because everybody was expecting to go through various times in their life and to appreciate the good times, knowing that they're going to be over
pretty soon. I have a cousin, and he always says to his little girl, "I hope you're having fun now, because pretty soon the fun will be over."
Yeah, I just said my daughter's 10, and I just said to her tonight, "You only have about 90 good years left."
And then that's done.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't say stuff like that. No, I can't help it.
No. But Yoko is pretty complex that way, and you know, I also think that I didn't understand her influence until many, many years later. I mean, I knew who she was from, I guess, from 1968 on, when she kind of arrived on the Beatles scene. But it didn't occur to me then that, oh, she's the one who probably came up with the idea of a blank album cover with just a number stamped on it, And, you know, the fact that apples played a role in her art, I don't know if that was the deciding factor that made Apple their record label. Maybe you know that better than I. But I didn't really get her influence on the Beatles then, but she was pretty influential.
I think so. But beyond the Beatles, what she did with... I don't really care about the Beatles, I'm sorry.
No, I understand that.
But
see, because you're too young to care about the Beatles, that's why.
She was the one female to ever be allowed in a recording session for, what was it, Revolution Number 9?
Right.
Yeah, and she did do some vocals. I think she wasn't the one mixing, though, because you can't hear her. But the album that they did, Two Virgins,
right.
That's the one where they're John and Yoko are naked, right?
Yeah.
That everybody was so down on them, like, you know, that's disgusting, you're ugly, you know, you have a bad ass and things like that. But actually, if you think about it, that was just showing a suit, like the biggest superstar that we had in the whole world, naked and vulnerable, John, I mean.
Yes.
And and that hadn't been done, and that was really shocking.
It was. I remember when the record came out and they had to wrap it in brown paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I of course bought it because it was John Lennon, you know. And I took it home and I put it on and I said, what the hell is this? But years later, I figured out what it was. And there was an occasion I found that I listened to that record and it was the perfect record for what I was doing at that moment. And, you know, I think that really is a great work of art. You have to be in the exact right frame of mind, possibly the exact frame of mind they were in when they made it for it to work. But it's a pretty remarkable record. Have you ever listened to it?
Yeah, I have. I'm so young that things off YouTube a lot. I don't have a record player.
You don't have a record player? What's the matter with you? I mean, in your book, you talk about Yoko in some ways as like you were there when they were on the Mike Douglas show, but you probably missed that whole thing when they were on the Mike Douglas show because you were like four.
Yeah, it was my bedtime.
No, it was on in the afternoon. See, you know, it was an afternoon show. The Mike Douglas show. It was, you know, there was a lot of stuff used to be on in the afternoon. And, I guess they still have things like that, like Ricky Lake and whatever. But Mike Douglas had a co-host every day for a week. And one week, John and Yoko were the co-hosts. It was a wild show. I mean, you mentioned it in your book, so you must have seen it somewhere.
I saw it on YouTube.
What is this YouTube that you young people are always talking about?
It's probably something else entirely. Everybody else is watching, and I'm the old one, and you're the grandpa.
Yeah, I also remember when Yoko toured. I don't know. You didn't mention this in your book, but she did a solo tour during that period in which she and John were split up, and John was in L.A.
Right.
And there was a picture of her. I didn't see the show, which I wish I had. But and then she toured again in the 80s, but she did a tour in the 70s, and she was wearing hot pants. She's pretty good.
It's unfortunate that they didn't film everything
like they
back
do now.
Then.
Yeah.
Yes, because a lot of the things that she was doing before John, like with John Cage or herself or, you know, anybody really, it was really, really cool stuff. There was one... where she completely orchestrated a whole dance. She choreographed a whole dance, and she was very meticulous about it. But then she did the dance, or she had the dancers, professional dancers, do it in complete darkness, and people in the audience couldn't see any of it. And yet they had the dancers had rehearsed, and I think that's really neat because, you know, it makes you really think about, it's not just actually seeing the beautiful end product movements. Like, you know that it's going on in the dark and you can kind of feel it. But I think even with watching a video of complete darkness, I think I would get that same excitement, but maybe I'm unusual.
There was a record, maybe you would like to get a copy of it. It was called An Evening with Marcel Marceau. And it was just It was just a record of him performing. You know, he was a mime. He never spoke a word. You could hear his little feet.
I didn't know this.
You could hear his little feet, you know, tapping on the stage as he ran around and did his thing. And occasionally the audience would laugh or something.
Who put this record out?
It was, oh, that was the best part. It was on Gone If Records.
Was this a one-off?
I think it was the only record that label put out, yeah.
I think they only made one copy and you have it. But I would like a copy, too. I would like to be copy number two.
we're chatting with Lisa Carver, and her new book is called Reaching Out with No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono. She's also known as Lisa Suck Dog. Why are you known as Lisa Suck Dog?
I did not name myself that.
Oh, good.
Yes. I was working at Photo Booth as a teenager. Photomat, remember those?
Yeah, sure.
They were clear in the middle of a parking lot.
You drive in. Now they're all, they've changed them all into coffee places.
They don't develop film anymore.
No.
So anyway, somebody called me in my photo booth where I was all alone and wanted me to be in a, I know you're going to edit this out.
Go ahead. We don't edit. We're fine. You go right ahead.
In a bestiality porno video.
Uh-huh.
And so, of course, I said yes.
Oh,
not
sure.
Meaning, I didn't mean yes, but I just...
Can we find it on YouTube?
No, <never mind. laughs> No, it never got made.
But oh, good.
I was just having some fun talking with the people about it. And so they said that they wanted me to be with a horse. And I said, oh, my God, no. And so then we finally negotiated that it would be a dog.
Did you negotiate what breed of dog it would be?
They stopped calling after a while. They were just crank calling, I think. I think there were other teenagers like me, and we were both keeping up the front for a while. And so I got my friend Rachel in on it, and she said she'd take the horse. So then,
She was Rachel Suck Horse, and you were Lisa Suck Dog. Okay.
Yeah, and boy, this was really a great story to tell when I was having my custody hearings, and the judge asked that same question of me. But at the same time, you know, I was doing things like throwing ice cubes out the window at people because I thought the evidence would melt. Before police got there, if I saw a cute boy or something, so it was pretty innocent in my mind.
You know that I think it's an Alfred Hitchcock Presents where this lady murders her husband with a leg of lamb, a frozen leg of lamb, and then she cooks it and serves it to the police.
No, that's really good.
Yeah, they
but
eat,
recently
they
there was a real story about a lady in Florida. Of course, it was Florida.
Naturally,
and she the police found her. Husband, this was that tennis judge, famous, like 80-year-old tennis judge, the lady was, and her husband was found with his head bashed in the coffee cup that did it, right next to him, and she claimed that he had gone downstairs, gotten the coffee cup, gone back upstairs and bashed his own head in. That's very similar. I'm sorry that you called me tonight.
Oh, no, it's great. One of the things I loved about your book, Reconsidering Yoko Ono, Reaching Out With No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono, is you really did a wonderful job, and there's a lovely little article in the New York Times Magazine that kind of condenses it, although not as well as your whole book does. But you talked about, you know, Yoko's work in an interesting way. When you said we have enough stuff, do you know what I'm talking about? Can you put it better than I just did?
No, but yeah, we're just cluttered with stuff 24 hours a day. It's always on. I wake up in the middle of the night and I have my little iPhone next to my pillow, and I might need to check to see if something somewhere happened somewhere.
Right.
In that, you know, and it's just nonstop, and I have. No, I have stuff all over my house. My kids are all on their own little screens, and everybody complains about this, but it's true. It's very, you know, it's diffuse. It's a few stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
and she didn't do stuff. She didn't make stuff. She didn't create. She suggested that we get something out of the way, and she suggested how. Like when she said, cut a hole in a painting and look through that hole, in a canvas, rather,
mm-hmm.
and look through the hole at the sky. If that's a way to get you to actually see the sky. We don't see the sky. When's the last time you looked up at the sky for real? Like, really looked at it?
Yeah. Well, and I always thought, you know, if she says, imagine a tree on this, she got a big blank canvas, says, imagine a tree. If she had painted a tree, there would just be one tree. But if, depending on how many people go in and imagine the tree, she's painted a gazillion trees.
And every single one of them is different, just like you guys' faces on the radio. every vision, every version of that tree is going to be different. It's collaborative. It's really social.
Yeah, but, you know, one of the, to me, the most enigmatic aspects or inexplicable aspects, I guess, of Yoko Ono, you know, we were talked earlier about people who hate Yoko Ono who don't know anything about her. But there are people who know about her and have strong feelings about her. On this show here, I had Cynthia Lennon, and she told me that...
I wonder why she would have something against
her. Yeah, okay. Obviously, she would have, you know, reason to have bad feelings about Yoko. But at the same time, she said that Yoko was trying to erase her and especially Julian from John's legend. And she gave several examples of this thing.
I believe it.
Yeah, why would Yoko want to do that?
I think she's insecure. I mean, she grew up losing everything constantly. And then she lost, you know, her everything. You know, her partner, her equal, her love, her friend, her collaborator, her ticket out of Coldwater Flats. And the only man who had ever understood her was gone. She'd lost everything all her life. She lost her father. She lost her mother. She lost her position in society. She lost her country. Now this was lost too. And the way that she seems to deal with things is in her mind. So I think in her mind, she needed to erase the rest of his family. I don't think she could take it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Would you say the same thing applies to this deal with Paul McCartney? I mean, I thought it was really dumb when Paul wanted to have his name in front of John's on certain songs. Instead of it being Lennon McCartney, he wanted to be McCartney Lennon on Blackbird or Yesterday because he primarily was the one who wrote those songs. And I think it was stupid that he wanted it, but at the same time, it was really stupid that Yoko said no, he couldn't do it.
Yeah, I can't care about that. It's hard when your hero is petty. You don't want to see that. So don't talk to me about that.
Okay. Have you met Yoko?
I have not. I would. You know what? I don't want to, actually. I was going to say I would love to, but I'd like to keep her like she is. And I would like her to, I don't know if she's read the book, ever will, cares. Mm-hmm. I don't know what her reaction would be, but I like to keep her feeling about the book and me in my mind. Just like, I just like to keep it like I want to keep it. And I'm afraid of if she didn't have any reaction, it would hurt my feelings. So I'm just going to keep my little delusion.
Well, Lisa Carver, your book's not just about Yoko Ono, but in some ways you sort of, I'm not going to say imitate Yoko, but I mean, you kind of write it in a Yoko-esque style, a little bit like Grapefruit. Then you have little tiny chapters, and one chapter is only one sentence.
Thank you. I wish it were more like that. I would not even mind just, you know, if I had copied Grapefruit word for word and then they published it and they just published it as my name, and I thought that was a really good performance joke. but she's, you know, she goes way back with the Cones. Long before I was interested in her, I was interested in Cones. Or, is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Coans, K-O-A-N-S, the, you know, clapping with one hand.
Oh, uh-huh.
Sound,
yeah,
one hand.
I don't know.
Yeah. She always wanted to do impossible things. Like, I noticed that you stumbled over the title earlier. And
yeah.
Actually, after all the times that I've had to repeat it, I can't remember the title. I always, of my own book, I have to look it up.
What is it again? Yeah. well, and also the way you've, or not you, but whoever it is, maybe it's you, that laid out the title on the cover of the book. It's I thought at first it was a book about Sid Caesar because I'm dyslexic, and the way it's laid out there, it looks like could
good
be a book about Sid Caesar.
I think it's very handsome. I'm very happy with the design, and you know, it also looks like an Oscar.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, that's right. With a red base.
Yeah, and a little bit Nazi-ish. Red and black.
Well, of course, Yoko was a fan of Adolf Hitler, apparently.
Well, she had some kindness in her heart for him, and if more people had, as she put it, if she had been his girlfriend and turned him on, the World War II would have never happened, and I believe her. And, you know, I think that most killers and warmongers...
Sure, because she would have broken up the Nazi party as soon as she got there. would have split up.
That is really good. I saw another little YouTube video of when John and Yoko were doing their bed in, or this is right after the bed-in,
mm-hmm.
and a female journalist who was very angry was saying how disappointed she was in them, and they were trying to tell her, you need to smile. You can't be a killer when you're smiling and laughing with happiness and joking. It's just impossible. And this woman said, oh, yeah, killing millions, genocide is really funny, ha, ha, ha. And she was very serious, and she stormed out. But they were laughing and joking, and it was true. You know, they weren't... When you look at footage of war, people are not happy.
Yeah, no, they're definitely not.
And you know, you really do need to spread some yucks.
Well, John. Whoa. John always said that he and Yoko were like the Laurel and Hardy of mm-hmm. of protest movements.
You know, I've never seen Laurel and Hardy.
Well, that's terrible. You should write your next book about Laurel and Hardy.
I should, without doing any research at all. Then I could really make people angry.
Well, they were a comedy team, Lisa, and they were quite funny.
I heard that one was very tall and skinny and one was very short and fat, and that's already, just that alone is ripe with possibilities.
And incorrect. They were about the same height, but one was fat.
Oh, really?
One was fat, one was thin. I think the fat one might even been a little taller than the thin one, a little.
But we've done, you always make it funnier in your mind.
The book that we don't want to talk about anymore is called Reaching Out with No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono, and it really is a wonderful book, and congratulations on it. And the author is Lisa Carver, and this is the first of many appearances here on From the Bookshelf. Thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you. It has been so much less painful than I thought it would be.
I'm going to put that on the blurb on my dust jacket.
I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time, and you'll come back and see us again next week. Check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com or subscribe to the podcast at iTunes. I want to thank my guest, Lisa Carver, her latest book, Reaching Out with No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.